Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, hosting solo today and letting you know we are more than a podcast. We have information and tools for you, and we do presentations for parent groups. We can also work with you on having book discussions or a discussion group, virtual or live. So pop on over to mightyparenting.com to see what we have for you, or email us at connect@mightyparenting.com if you want to find out what else we have or talk about a book club or discussion group. Today, our topic is one that you are going to love because you guys frequently ask questions about it, and that is technology. I know as parents, we have concerns about our connection with our kids and sometimes about their ability to connect with other people in this age of technological distraction. And it is not easy to manage devices. I deal with this just like you do in my life and my family. I know that my personal cell phone use has crept up, and I have noticed, which you may hear during our discussion today, I've noticed more of a tendency to wanting to grab that phone or feeling like I have to do something. And a few months ago, my daughter commented to me about my cell phone use and some kind of teenage comment about, well, you never put that thing down. And I just kind of went, well, that's not true, and I blew it off, especially coming from someone who was never without their phone, right? This is my daughter who was born in the age of the internet and cell phones. But she created an awareness in me, and what happened is I started to notice my cell phone usage more, and it had creeped up. I was using it more, and it started to bother me when I saw that, and I saw some of the drive to use it, to go grab it, to have it close by, or to check that ping or ding instead of being able to ignore it. And what really bothered me about that was how often it pulled my attention away from people I was with. Even though it wasn't constant, it was a distraction, and I did not like that. And yet, at the same time, I can see the power of these devices. My cell phone and my computer, they let me stay in touch with people that I might not be in touch with otherwise. They let me have daily or semi-daily or bi-daily check-ins with extended family members. We'll have little group chats, or people will be sending photos of their vacations, and we're talking and connecting in ways we wouldn't. I get to pack up my work and my life and drive across state and go and visit my parents regularly because I don't have to take time off to do that thanks to technology. So there's this push and pull, this love-hate thing going on. And that's kind of the issue we have, right? How can we use our devices so they're helpful, connecting, and empowering, and not damaging? And that's the question for today. And we have expert Danny Kim helping us sort this out. Danny is an organizational consultant who works with individuals and organizations of all sizes to create compelling experiences that help individuals and teams maximize their potential. And he is currently writing his dissertation on the relationship between problematic smartphone use and emotional intelligence. So, Danny, welcome, and thanks for joining our Mighty Parenting community today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Danny, you heard me going on about this, about my cell phone use, but what I tend to hear more out and about is people complaining about teenagers being glued to their phones. And I'm wondering if that's an accurate representation of what's happening in our culture.
Sure. Well, first off, I want to let your audience know that I myself am not a parent of teenagers or kids. I don't have any kids. My wife and I don't have any kids, but a lot of this conversation perhaps will be from some of my anecdotal conversations with parents, with kids. But actually, this conversation really began and became really important for me when I was beginning my dissertation process, and I really wanted to see how technology was impacting the workplace, specifically on human connection with one another. And I was having a conversation with my dad on the side, who happens to be a pediatrician of 30 years. And he has seen, you know, kids throughout different generations being raised. And so I asked him, I said, Dad, are you noticing that kids are coming to your office with more what I would call problematic smartphone use? And I'll describe why I use that terminology versus smartphone addiction. So problematic smartphone use. And he said, actually, I don't really notice the kids on their phones when they're in my, you know, in my office. But what I do recognize is that their parents are completely glued to their smartphones. And I don't know about you, Sandy. I mean, you have kids. Like, when you're at the doctor's office, you're not there to just kind of hang out casually. You're there for 15, 20 minutes, and you're usually there because something's wrong with your child, right? They have a cold, right. They broke their arm, or, you know, something's happened. Even if it's a checkup, you're like, this is about their well-being physically. And yet, it's interesting that my dad says that most of the parents that come into their office are completely distracted by their smartphones. And that was incredibly shocking for me. And the other time that this topic became really important for me was when I was working with some clients and I started sharing about my dissertation. And they said, wow, I've got kids. I need to read your dissertation after you figure out what you find out. And so to answer your question, is this just a teenage problem? Probably not. It's actually a human problem. Now, are teenagers impacted and affected by it? Absolutely. You know, the neuroscience shows that before the age of 25, our prefrontal cortex and our decision-making capabilities are not fully intact. And so what that means is if you grew up in an age when you're 12, 13, 14, and you've got accessibility to smartphones, your neural pathways are literally being shaped by your smartphone. Now that happened, that has happened throughout all of history, meaning, you know, things shape us, books that we read, you know, the interactions that we have with friends. But what's happening is that technology is even more, is expediting and accelerating that the way that our brains are being formed. And I think that's a really interesting topic that we have to consider, that our children, you know, teenagers, even kids that are in college, are getting impacted and influenced by these technologies. And one of the things I'll say this is that technology companies are not concerned about how well you're using your smartphones. They are concerned with capturing your attention. And what I mean by that is, they don't care whether you're curbing your addiction or you're curbing your amount of time you're on Instagram or Snapchat or even the newsfeed. They want to have your eyeballs glued to your smartphone. Why? Because that's how they make money, right? That's literally what they're looking for. Now, it's not as malicious as that sounds, but really they're trying to capture your attention. You know, Snapchat has the snap streak, which basically has, you know, kids are saying, I need to make sure I send a Snapchat to somebody within 24 hours in order to keep and maintain my streak. That creates the sense of addiction and a sense of desire to want to stay relevant and have that the likes. Just the other day, I saw an article based in Australia that Instagram in Australia may actually stop showing how many likes you get on a photo. Right? Those likes are these kind of desires for people to say, wow, I'm loved, I'm cared for, I'm seen by others. And that is inherently starting to cause a sense of inability to stop and pause and say, why am I on my smartphone? You know? To answer your question, it's not just teenagers, it's actually parents as well.
Well, and that, it sounds odd, but in a sense, there's some relief in that for me because with teens and 20 somethings, that gives us a great place to start talking to them, to start those conversations. And it lets us say, you know what? I realized that this is impacting my life in a way I don't like.
Yes.
And this is what I'm going to do to change it. You know, here at Mighty Parenting, we talk about we have to model what we want our kids to do. Now, that doesn't guarantee they'll do it, but you can pretty much guarantee they're not going to do it if you're not doing it. So, you know, it gives us that. And Danny, I was listening to you talking and I'm chuckling over here because I got a new phone. Well, new phone and computer, and went from the Android to the Apple world late last fall. And when I got my phone, I just went to the Apple store. I'm like, here, I'm going from this to this. Help me move this. Help me get this set up. Going to the Apple universe terrifies me because every time I pick up an iPhone, I can't figure out what to do with it. But I'm doing it anyway. So every time they ask me a question, do you want notifications? Do you want to see this on your screen? I said, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
And it was such a relief because, and it's not Apple versus Android necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's the way I set up my phone.
Yeah.
And just not having, the only notifications that come through are my text messages and my phone calls. Everything else just sits there. And a few months ago, because I use social media for work. And so I'm like, well, I got to keep this, you know, if people are asking me questions, answering things, I need to be available. And especially as our regular listeners know, Judy had to go on sabbatical to help take care of her hubby. And so I'm like, I really need to pay more attention because she was more a social media person. All I did was have it switch so that on my home screen, and I have all my social media smushed into one, and I don't even know the right term, but I have them all bucket, smushed into one icon there, right?
Sure.
And so it just shows me now the number of notifications there are. That's the only change I made. And when I did that, that pull started again.
Yeah.
And that's just a small thing. And I'm an adult with a fully formed brain who's using this primarily for work.
Yes.
So I can't imagine what it's like for a teenager dealing with all that angst and getting that pull.
Yes. One of the research that shows is that our generation, this generation of teenagers, is the most connected in all of history, yet they are the most lonely generation. Now, is that causation or correlation? You know, there's a great book if people are really interested in this topic to dive into more. It's by an author named Jean Twenge. She's a professor actually here in San Diego State where I live. And she wrote a book called iGen. And it's an incredible book. And what she does is she kind of maps out different generations and people's capacity for play, how many hours they spent on homework, to then ultimately how many hours they spent on their smartphone or mobile devices. And as you see that trend up, you begin to see anxiety, loneliness, depression starting to creep in even more and more and more. And there's this really interesting, I'm going to say, disguise that technology has, because it promises us fulfillment, right? It promises us connection. It promises us reach. It promises us really the kind of human essence of wanting to be known, right? So that's not a bad thing. But can you really be known by 1,000 followers? Like, is that a realistic expectation? Or is that something that's disguised as ultimate connection? You know, several years ago, my wife actually decided to cut off all social media, Instagram and Facebook. She wasn't that active anyways. But since that time, she has actually felt more free than she did when she was on her phone. Now, does she miss out on a couple things? You know, friends' birthdays, those kinds of events? Sure. But it actually also gives the freedom, the expectation is no longer there for her to have to feel like she needs to be all things to all people, you know, or she doesn't feel bad if her friend forgets her her birthday, right? And those that are close, they remember. There's this real connection there. So I think there's something interesting that's happening right now with technology because it promises us deep connection, but really it's surface connection. And I've got yet to write this article. I have it in my mind, but basically I want to write an article called How Twitter Has Killed Our Empathy. And one of the things, the beautiful things about Twitter or these kinds of social media realities that's good is, number one, it gives us information. I think it democratizes information. That I think that's really important for a human society, for us to be in the know. The other thing that it's really good for is it gives us a voice. It lets us speak freely. It gives us the kind of ability to speak freely. However, the challenge of it is that the backside of it is we might know too much, right? Things that we don't need to know right away. There's some interesting ethics on specifically when there's tragic accidents that people find out about their loved ones being hurt through Twitter faster than they get a message from their loved ones themselves, you know, or kind of family connections. So they're starting to get news faster. And so they don't have the ability to choose how they get information. And then the second thing is that people, because they're just avatars on Twitter, for example, they are more aggressive as a result. They say things because they think it doesn't really matter that much, that are more harmful and hurtful, you know, and you see this on cyberbullying, on, you know, replies on Twitter or Instagram. And because we think, quote unquote, we're removed from the situation because we're simply an avatar, not an actual human being on the other side of that technology.
That is very interesting. Going back to your first point about the people knowing too much too soon, we had a family member pass away earlier this year. And me, I'm in my early 50s. And even though I use social media, it had not occurred to me to tell the younger people, don't post this on Facebook yet. Because we haven't even, you know, it happened in late at night. And so we hadn't contacted all the immediate family yet.
Right.
And I know one of my kids found out by seeing it on a social media post. And that's just not the way we want to get that kind of information.
Yeah.
And I know there was a thing going around for a little while on Facebook saying, you know, don't post about people's deaths. I don't know if they said like 72 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in this aggression side that you brought up too, because we get questions from parents and we ask, what do you guys need to know about? And technology certainly is one, but another one is also going to the bullying and things like that. And we hear in the news and in the media that our kids are lonelier, less happy, more anxious, more depressed, which are mental and emotional wellness health issues.
Right.
And we also know that depression and anxiety and some of those things can show up as anger and fear and encourage people to lash out. And it sounds like when you combine that with this feeling of being removed, that that can just escalate those behaviors.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, in when I was in high school, we had barely had the internet. AOL had just came out. So, you know, instant messaging was like, just like the hottest thing. And, you know, I waited for 10 minutes to log on to my parents' 56K modem. And I was on it for about 15 minutes because that's all that we could afford, you know?
Yeah.
So like that's a very different generation than when you can pull out your phone, you can take a video of a kid falling down the stairs, and then literally the entire school in the next 2 minutes will see it, right? Like, that is actually really dangerous, because what it does is it perpetuates shame, and it creates the ability that I can bully anybody, and it's just for fun, quote unquote, or I'm just going to send it to my friends via Snapchat. But what that does is it literally shapes people's reality and the perception of each other. And so, I mean, this is interesting, Sandy, because like, it's not just teenagers. I'm working at a digital design agency, and they're millennials. I mean, they're 20-somethings, 30-somethings. And literally I had an interview with somebody and they said, yeah, this person didn't add me or follow me on Instagram. And it made me feel bad. And so it's like, it's not just like a teenage problem. It's a human problem, right? And like whether people follow each other or like a comment or whatnot, there's all this kind of social baggage that we're not even aware of. But I think there's something sad about technology that, and I'm specifically talking about social media right now, right? So I think that social media has given us the permission to, you know, think we are invincible and think it's funny and think that we want to get a good laugh, when in reality, it's really damaging or hurting people. And actually, honestly, it could have legal ramifications. There are things that people are doing today that are found on Instagram or Snapchat that are then taken to the law and they get in trouble for it. So I actually tell some of my students that I work with, high school students that I just recently worked with, I said, be very careful what you put on social media because you don't know what's going to come back to bite you. You know, maybe you're applying for a job 5 years from now and they find something there that was inappropriate. Like that, you may not get that job because of that experience or might not get into school. And now there's some ethics on how employers or schools look at social media, but that's a reality that people are putting out there into the world publicly and saying, this is who I am. So if we can have more of a mindset that says, what am I putting out there? Is this actually helpful or is it hurtful? If I have even a question in my mind that this is like going to impact my future in any shape, way, or form, that probably is a sign to say, don't do it. You know, don't just be wise and not put it out there. You know, one of the other things that I think is interesting that is important for our conversation is I use the phrase problematic smartphone use as opposed to smartphone addiction, because right now in the DSM, which is a manual for disorders, the smartphone addiction is not yet approved as smartphone addiction. Now there's internet addiction that they've quantified, but the smartphone addiction, the reason why that one's a little trickier is because the question is, are they using it? Are they addicted to social media? Are they addicted to shopping? Are they addicted to information? Are they, you know, like what are they addicted to? And it's far more complex. It's all of those. It's potentially all of those addictions into one. So it's difficult to kind of parse out what it is for you.
I think that's an important point for parents.
Yes.
Because this is something we can tease out is one, we don't want to wait to do something until we go, oh, definitely our kid has a smartphone addiction. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. We want to look for in our kids and us and friends, problematic use.
Yes.
But the conversation we can have is, hey, you know, I've noticed you seem to be spending more time mm-hmm. on your phone than you used to. What yes. are you up to? Yeah. What's so interesting? What's yeah. going on there? And kind of find out what they're doing.
Yes.
I know with one of my girls, my husband was having a really hard time with it. Well, it was because she is a huge reader and mm-hmm. She found fan fiction. And she started reading that on her phone as opposed to reading physical books.
Yeah.
But what he just saw was this kid with a phone in her face.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great set of conversation starters paired yes. with, I'm also going to back up for just a second, just because sure. I want to point out that you gave us a great intro to, because I don't want to keep going back to social media. I just want to say, parents,
yes,
the way we can talk to our kids about what they're posting on social media is, Danny said, you're showing the world, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And to just be able to go back and go, this is who I am. And what does this say about me as a human being? I think yeah. that's a great conversation too. So we have the social media conversation. Now yep. we can go, okay, what's going on? What are you doing on your phone?
Yeah.
What is so interesting?
Yep. So I just want to point one thing out. I just found this article this weekend, and there's a senator in Missouri who is trying to pass a bill called the Social Media Addiction Reduction Technology Act. SMART, Social Media Addiction Reduction Technology Act. And he actually talks a lot about addictive social media features and how and I said it earlier in the show that these companies, whether even Netflix, even though that's not social media, they are YouTube, for example, right? These are geared towards wanting your addiction, like wanting your attention. And so that's how they make their money, is by how much time I can get a captive audience. And so that could even be books, it could be articles, things of that nature. And so I think, yeah. So to step back to what you were saying, I loved it. The conversation of asking your children, who do you want to become? Like what is your desire? Like, how do you want to be seen in the world? You know, and recognize that every action leads to an opposite reaction. You know, everything that you do now, everything that you post now is going to have implications. Like, it's going to, the choices we make today will ultimately choose for you later on, right? So be cognizant of that. And as kids are aging and growing up into adulthood, the parents need to figure out how to create healthy boundaries for them to be able to help shape them into the, as they grow, you know, and start giving more leeway and give more, you know, like when I was growing up, it was, I had a curfew, you know, at 9 o'clock, I had to be home. And as I got older, that curfew got later. And so in that same way, that could be analogous to our smartphone use. Maybe it's 1 hour a day. Maybe it's only certain applications. Maybe it's only after dinner, after you've done homework. Now, I know it's difficult because smartphones are also used. You give it to your 10-year-old because you want to make sure that they can get a hold of you for any little thing. Maybe it's, I know it's not popular, but maybe it's a dumb phone, you know, not a smartphone. You get a phone that just has, you can call and text. And that's it. You know, there's a big movement towards more of that, because what we're finding is that the fact that we have supercomputers in our pockets or our purses is actually becoming more dangerous than good, you know, and it's becoming more distracting than it is good. So going to, you know, moving to the conversation of what are children using, what kind of applications are they using? There are actually ways, I know specifically on iPhone, but I'm pretty sure on Google Androids as well, you can see the amount of time that people are spending on certain applications. So if you're a parent of a teenager, you may want to do a weekly checkup and say, okay, how many hours are they spending on X? You know, on what, maybe it's social media, and I think it buckets it for you. And as parents, they can actually set parental controls to say, I'm gonna only allow you to spend 30 minutes on social media a day. And so after that time limit is up, they can no longer open up social media applications. Now, I know that sounds restrictive, and Sandy, you're going to know your audience better. These are some suggestions that I have, because I think the reality is adults that I work with cannot control themselves. They can't even control their own behaviors. So I can only imagine that teenagers are going to have even harder times, you know, being able to curb their addiction. Or your problematic smartphone use.
So I think for me, where I would come from with this is, one, it's different from child to child. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I would start at that point again of going, hey, I listened to this podcast. I've been reading this stuff. Wherever your concern is coming from, express your concern and say, and I noticed these things about myself. I'd like to talk to you about how you're using your phone and start having some conversations. Yes. I would not run in and just go, hey, we're going to start checking your phone use and then we're going to block it. It's having conversations with them and helping them to come up with their own plan, which can include these things. And you can make a suggestion. You can say, hey, while we're doing this, let's sit down every Sunday and both of us get out our phones and let's see what we're doing. And be open and transparent with what you're doing too. That goes a long way with teens and 20-somethings. I do not guarantee it works. I still get eye rolls when I do that with various things, but on other things, it still really works. And it's a good place to start.
Yep.
And remember, you are the parent. If there is a real problem that you think is a danger to your child, which any kind of an addiction is a danger to your child, listen to some of the shows that we've done on addiction. Listen to Neil D. Brown's article on parenting power struggles, and you'll get some ideas that you can pick and choose and pull from to help you in your specific situation. But yeah, absolutely, Danny, we want to know what we're doing. Yep. And how we're using our phones. And that's a great way to do it. What I'm also wondering is, you know, you study this with emotional intelligence, and we're worried about this human connection as parents, especially in the Mighty Parenting community. You know, a lot of us are focused on, we want a good relationship with our child. That's the best way to parent through teens and 20s, is not being the friend, but having a good, honest, strong relationship. Is our use of phones impacting those relationships?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm hoping that I can get some really interesting research based on my study. So that has yet to be confirmed. But what some of the research shows is that, you know, children or people in general, that when they feel lonely or anxious or depressed, the best thing that can happen is to have high contact conversations. And what I mean by that is eyeball to eyeball human connection. You know, it's, hey, how are you doing? You know, what are you struggling with? What are the challenges you're facing? What are you most excited about at school? What are you, you know, what are your goals? What are your aspirations? Like, you know, tell me about your teacher. Tell me about your friends. Like, what do you like about your friendships? You know, these are some sample questions, but the research shows that when we have these kinds of meaningful conversations, it dispels anxiety. It lessens the power of depression. And I think that parents, what the smartphone does is it immediately takes your attention away from that person. You know, if you are having a conversation with your child, let's say during dinner, my encouragement to you would be to have your phone away. Like if you're like, maybe you pick them up from school, rather than multitasking and asking them how their day was and checking your phone while driving, that happens, right?
Right.
What if you could actually just put your phone away for 30 minutes on your drive home and say, I am fully invested. And you mentioned this. I think that this kind of smartphone behavior that we need to modify needs to be modeled more than it is taught, more than it is spoken about. You know, if we are as parents are always on our phones and then we tell our children, hey, stop being on your phone, it doesn't really send a message, right? And actually the research shows that when you are around communities, like that could be family groups or even friend groups that have different and curbed smartphone use, everyone else begins to model that behavior. It's similar to the same way why people lose weight when they're surrounded by people who want to lose weight, you know, or go to the gym more. It's the same. We're social animals. And what that means is that we get influenced by the people that are around us. We get influenced by the people that are there. So if you're, let's say you're a parent and you start kind of putting your phone away during dinner, or you put your phone away during a conversation or a movie that you're watching, and you choose to engage your student or your child, like that is going to say so much more than, you know, if you're on your phone and then telling them to put their phones away. I think there's something valuable there. And one of the things I might offer to parents is consider what you can do when you're not on your smartphone. So maybe that's going away, going camping for the weekend, or creating space and giving them something that they like to do and saying, hey, for the next half day, or, you know, we're all going to go to the beach and we're going to spend time as a family. And I'm going to offer that none of us have our phones because we don't need that distraction. I want us to be fully present with one another. Start building in those rhythms. And all of a sudden that actually creates some freedom. The research shows that when people have short-term voluntary disconnect, they're actually happy about it. They feel better about it. That's what the research shows. It's when your phone is taken away involuntarily or involuntarily and for a long time, that's when it gets really hard for people. But it's the short-term voluntary disconnects that actually creates a life-giving experience and ultimately human connection, because you're then saying, I'm going to look at the person and talk to them or play a game with them or go for a walk with them and be fully invested and connected with them.
Yeah, we go tent camping. Yes. And when we do that, there are no devices.
Yes.
Phones are off. They're in the cars. They yep. are not used during our camping trip. And it was funny because going back to this idea of saying it's teenagers, it was actually my father who had the hardest time with no phone at the campfire. I mean, we obviously right. can't take away grandpa's phone during the camping trip.
Yes.
But we did lay down the law because grandpa not only had his phone out, which was kind of fair because the rest of us were reading a book and he's not a reader. So sure. it's like, if we're not going to be interacting with him, we have to at least let him do something, right?
Yep.
But grandpa texts via voice and is saying, you know, hey Siri, do this, do that, look this up. And so we went, no phones yes. at the campfire. And then yes. we also had to make that adjustment. And yeah. also I know, you know, it's, in our house, when we were creating some, I say family rules, but it's really more like parent rules, because my girls are in their 20s now and we missed the boat on some things. Like I would have set up, in hindsight, anyone who's listening who has younger kids, I absolutely would have banned devices from the bedrooms at least after a certain time at yes. night.
Yes.
They can have a physical alarm clock. They don't need to use the phone, all that yep. kind of thing.
Yep.
But my husband, when we said, hey, you know, no smartphones for us in the bedroom. that was hard. He was like, well, I'm going to put it over on the dresser. It's not leaving the room. It's got to be on the dresser.
Right.
And a little bit of that is because we don't have a phone in the house. And it's like, well, you know, will it wake us up and all of that? But some of it is just that
need.
We're used to it, having it nearby.
Yes.
But when we got rid of them again, we found, yes, when we were getting ready for bed at night, instead of people checking that last email or looking at tomorrow's calendar, we were talking to each other like we used to.
Yes.
Before we had smartphones.
Yes.
So those, creating those moments for connection. Oh, and I did want to share one other thing, because this is the best thing. I saw it several months ago, but it was a family who said, okay, they put a table in their entryway of their home and all devices, no smartphones really.
Yep.
So smartphones have to stay on that table. You can use it as much as you want. You can do what you want, but you go there, you do what you're going to do, and then you go back to your life.
Yes.
And so I pulled that out after my daughter had made this comment to me that I talked about in the intro, and I went, okay, I picked a place, you know, a central location in my home so I can hear if it rings and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is where my phone's going to reside. And it doesn't always reside there, but that was a huge help. Getting it away from the table, getting it just away from me when I'm talking to my kids. I choose to have it next to me when I'm working or something.
Sure.
But other times putting it there brings that connectedness back. And it's good to know that there is research that shows that people do find relief in putting it down.
Yes.
This actually feels good. So that's a way we can tell our kids, say, hey, you know, we're going to build a campfire tonight. How about we say, you know, no phones at the campfire. And if they block and stuff, go, let's try it tonight or for a week and see what happens. Let's do an experiment. Because the hard part for me is when you said it has to be voluntary. And I went, oh, phooey. Now I have to get their buy-in. I can't just lay down the law.
Yes. And it's hard because, I mean, Sandy, to your point, I mean, you're talking about older adults or, you know, or older teenagers. And so it really is about shaping them from earlier on, because if you create these habits and models earlier, you know, when they're 12, 13, 14, when it gets to that point where they feel like they have to be always with their phones, if you can create these helpful models, it becomes easier, you know?
Yeah.
Where you don't have to go backwards as much. You know, one of the things that you mentioned about physically putting your phones in a certain location in your home is very, very good. Psychologists call this behavioral architecture, which means basically what are the things in our lives and how close are they to us? Because that's going to ultimately impact how often we use it. So for example, if you're trying to lose some weight and you've got donuts on your table, on your office desk every single day, you're not going to lose weight because it's right there. You know, like what I need on my desk is carrots and hummus and, you know, something that's healthier for me. I need to stop snacking in between and stop going to the break room where there's donuts and, you know, cookies. And in the same way, if your smartphone is a problem for you, you know, in your home, it's disconnecting you from your family. If it's buzzing every 5 minutes and you can't not, you know, if a lot of parents bring home work, you know, maybe it's like I've got a dedicated office where I keep my cell phone. I could have it on, but I leave it there so that when I'm getting dinner, I'm with my family. It's and your husband is absolutely, I mean, you know, putting your phone outside of the bedroom. There's some research that shows, right, the blue light that actually distracts you from sleeping. And that's a huge part of well-being is sleep. And so if you're not able to fall asleep regularly and efficiently, like that's going to impact your overall well-being. So I think there's something absolutely there that we have to be mindful of, that we take for granted, but there's an opportunity for that.
Okay. Well, I have really enjoyed this conversation, but I want to just go back and kind of sum up our high points. And I love this comment that you made, Danny. It's not just a teenager problem. It's a human problem. Mm-hmm. So again, we can start with modeling. We can start with conversations. And as we were just discussing, if you have younger kids, definitely, you know, set some boundaries. Yes. Talk to them about it and the whys and the wherefores. And remember that, yes, in many of our households, a phone is a necessity, a cellular phone, but a smartphone is not a necessity.
Yes.
That is a want, not a need in most people's worlds. So that's something else to consider too when they're younger and you're making those decisions. You said that technology wears a disguise. It promises us connection and reach, but it's not real connection. And real connection is what research has shown people need when they are feeling lonely, anxious, depressed, that the best thing they can have is high contact connection. And devices are not that. It's eye-to-eye conversations, deeply involved conversations. So we as parents can model the behaviors of looking at our own smartphone usage, because it is impacting our parenting and it's impacting our relationship with our kids. So take an honest look at it, even ask our kids, what do you see that I'm doing? And then take measures for that and carry on those conversations with our children to help develop when as young as possible. But even when they're older, I know I still impact my kids. I see it from this show, from the advice and the tips, that we can still impact them. So Danny, for anyone who would like to follow more of your research and see what comes out from you or connect with you, where can they find you?
Sure. So my personal website is Danny Kim with two M's. So Danny, DannyKimm.com. And they can reach me there. And my organization that I work for when I do consulting work and coaching is Centauric, which is Centauric.com. And so we do organizational consulting. I work with leaders and teams specifically when they are, you know, wanting to maximize their potential. And so digital distraction is part of that conversation as well. And so they can reach me there. And hopefully on my website at some point, I'll have my research out. So that's where they can connect with me.
Okay. And I don't normally do this, but I forgot there was a quote from you that I did want to absolutely share, because to me, this is a big parenting thing. You said, smartphones give us the illusion that we can be everywhere when in reality, we are nowhere. Yes. And that again is a big parenting issue that I see. I will do a Facebook Live this week. So if you're not in our Facebook group, go join and I will share my thoughts about that. But thank you everybody for being here, for listening, for being a mighty parent. You can subscribe to this podcast for free on your favorite podcast app, including Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and so much more. So remember to subscribe, like, and share, and I'll see you next week.